So welcome everybody to my first talk of this Buddhist Fellowship retreat here in beautiful, peaceful Jhana Grove. It's very rare to find such a quiet place in the world. So many other places, there's people, there's cars, or there's aircraft. But when we chose these sites, we made sure that we weren't on any flight path, which means it's very quiet. And every now and again there's a little bit of traffic on the road, which is at the top there, but it doesn't disturb us very much. And we can come into this room here and enjoy the peace and quiet. Because I've noticed that if you have quiet places in our world, it tends to make your mind quiet. It's as if the silence outside seeps like osmosis into your mind, and you become quiet. I remember just many places I've been to in the world, and some are very, very silent places. It brings to mind, oh, maybe 30 years ago, over that, 32, 33 years ago, going to one of the great forests in Thailand, and there was an idyllic monastery in the middle of the jungle, and there were some very deep limestone caves, which had been drained, and they'd even put a level floor in those caves. And right down the end of one of those limestone tunnels, there was a place you could sit and meditate. And there you couldn't hear any sound whatsoever, except the sound of your own breathing. Everything was absolutely quiet. It was so easy to meditate. You just could not meditate there, because everything around you was just so still. And just the mind just resonated with that stillness and became effortlessly very peaceful. So having quiet places really helps. And many of you coming from Singapore, it's a very busy place. You know, we just try our very best. We can't do much about that. But you come here just a little bit south on very nice cheap airlines to Australia, and just outside of the city, you can have these beautiful quiet places. So this is our great strength over here, to have space where you can find peace. And once you have the environment of peace outside, then it's our job to try and enhance that external peace with some internal quiet as well. But to gain that internal peace and quiet, first of all, you need to relax your body. So I know this myself, because I have to rush around and doing things. Just last night giving the talk in our centre in Onomar, and then coming back late last night and coming here early in the morning to help with the chanting. So I have many responsibilities and duties as well. But I know how to be aware of my body and how to be kind to my body. So when it needs to rest, I give it permission to rest. And that's the first teaching on this retreat, to give your body permission to rest at any time, even during my talk. You lay down and I won't object. Because when you give your body permission, it shows you're not controlling your body, but you're working with your body. Part of our Buddhist practice is to be compassionate, to be friendly, to be kind. And I often sort of notice how many Buddhists are very unkind to their body, pushing their body, making it do things when the body is telling you, no, you need to rest, pushing it to go faster when it tells you, no, I'm going fast enough. On a meditation retreat like this, you've got full opportunity to be kind to your own body, so you're not pushing it around so much. Which is why in these retreats which I teach, sometimes people think that we should be in the Guinness Book of Records for the softest, most comfortable retreats held by any Buddhist monk anywhere in the world. But no, it is not just for the sake of comfort. I do this out of wisdom, out of having taught for many years, and understanding that if you just give your body some kindness, if you give it some friendliness, some compassion, then your body will work with you rather than you working against your body. It's having this harmony with the body to the point where you can just let the body disappear. If you're not in harmony with the body, you'll always have some aches or pains. You'll have some tiredness or restlessness. And that's all a sign that your body is not relaxed. When your body is relaxed, then your mind can become peaceful. So, on this retreat, first couple of days on any retreat, even for the local people here, I say, whenever you wish to take a nap, go take a nap. You won't be indulging. You'll be just catching up. Catching up on all that tiredness which is stored inside of your body because of how one lives one's lifestyle. And as one rests in the first couple of days, the body starts to relax, open out, become peaceful. And when the body has become peaceful, you'll find it so much easier to meditate. The body will allow you to watch your breathing. It will allow you to sit for long periods of time. Many of the hindrances, especially restlessness, comes from just the body being tired, aching, and just needing just a little bit of kindness from you. So, give it that kindness. And it works. You all know from the story of the Buddha's enlightenment that he followed an ascetic practice, extreme asceticism, but even moderate asceticism was too much. And when the Buddha found the middle way, you know in that story his first five disciples abandoned him. He said, "You're just indulging, you're being too comfortable." And he said, "No one can become enlightened that way," he said to the first five disciples, said to the Buddha. And of course the Buddha sort of let them go. And when the Buddha found this beautiful middle path, and a comfortable path, you know, he became enlightened very quickly. And when he went back to see those first five disciples, first of all they saw, this is just some namby-pamby cream puff, someone who doesn't know what real practice is. But then they saw that he was very brilliant and bright in his faculties, that something had changed. Even though they didn't understand how on earth you can become enlightened when you don't struggle so hard, the enlightenment was palpable, could be seen. So they listened. And that's when the Buddha taught the first teaching, the middle way, which is why I make that the first teaching of any retreat, the middle way. Learning to work with your body, with kindness, with compassion. The underlying reason for that is also something very basic in meditation. When you try and force the body, come on, sit up straight. Now come on, sit for another 20 minutes. Get up earlier, stay up later. Do more practice. You find that that is what we call controlling the body. And when you start controlling the body, you just make a bigger ego, a bigger sense of self. And that just makes the problem even worse. Our basic underlying role in Buddhism is to allow this sense of self to diminish, to fade away until it ceases altogether. Till we realize no self or emptiness. In other words, we let go of controlling, creating, making, doing. We let things be. And we start that with letting your body be. So in this whole retreat here, we're going against the control freak inside each one of us. Instead of actually controlling your life, you're listening to it, being mindful of it, and being kind to your very life. Because, you know, you've all tried to control things in the past. I gave a talk last night at Dhammaloka that, you know, I tried and controlled the monastery a long time ago. Sometimes they gave me the nickname. I was supposed to be the spiritual director of the Buddhist Society in Western Australia. They nicknamed me the spiritual dictator. Well, I'm not a spiritual dictator because you can't do anything anyway. You give orders and people do something else. And you know that monasteries run much more beautifully when you don't control, You can encourage, you can advise, but then everybody has to practice according to their own abilities, just like your body. Oh, you can encourage, you can advise, but you know your body has got a life of its own, so you just have to work with your body. There will be times when you're tired. There will be times when you have lots of energy. It's really quite strange on these retreats that sometimes that you just need to sleep a lot. Sometimes 10, 11, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, you don't feel like sleeping. If you don't feel like sleeping, don't sleep. You'll catch up later. You just work with your body. And when people are kind and gentle to their body, not first of all you get much better health, and secondly the mind is easier to make peaceful. I should also mention that you don't get extra points which make it faster to get to enlightenment when you sit cross-legged on the floor. So this is why in this retreat center we have chairs. Those chairs are there to sit on. In other words, those people who feel a little bit tired in the body, a bit achy, please make use of these chairs. We actually ordered them, we designed them especially for this retreat center, for meditation chairs. You see the ones with the handrest on either side. That's for people who have the slot and torpor by leaning over to the side to stop them falling off. If people actually lean forward, we'll find some seat belts for you. You don't fall off. But these are just simple chairs, but comfortable for meditation, not too soft and not too hard. And we do this because when you're meditating, unless you're used to sitting on the floor, you know that sometimes it gets very painful and your body gets tense. And again, you can't get any deep meditation because your body is not peaceful. So make use of the chairs. There's also, we try to make as much wall space as possible. If you don't like the chair, that sometimes people like leaning back, please do that so that you can be comfortable. They always say the first class seats at any Buddhist temple are next to the wall where you can lean against something. That's the first people who come, get those places straight away. By being kind to your body. And I'm emphasizing that because most people aren't kind to their body. By being kind to the body, your body feels in good health, energetic, and as the Buddha said, it's malleable, easy to work with. So for the first couple of days, please look after your body. Be mindful of the body, relax it, drink the right amount, eat the right amount, rest, walk, have some exercise. The other great thing about a retreat center like this, there's so many places you can walk. We just, this last few months, we planted this nice little garden down below the lower cottages. And the landscaper is a very brilliant man. He made these paths. Not one path is straight. It's zigzag all over the place. Which is great, because you can't make any shortcuts. You have to go round this way and round that. Just like meditation, there are no shortcuts. You go this way and that way. And that means that you can exercise, but the exercise is also telling you some Dhamma as well. Don't take the shortest route. Take the long way round. It's faster. So you can exercise. And again, it's a beautiful time of the year. I was a bit concerned because if it does really start to get warm, we get some flies coming out. It's just the time of the year. But just the cool weather the last few days has actually suppressed the flies, so hopefully they won't be bothering you too much. I think the Buddhist Society of West Australia retreat, which is going to follow a couple of weeks afterwards, I think they're going to get hit by quite a few flies. But that's just the nature of the bush here in Australia. It's peaceful, it's calm. So enjoy that peace and calm. Exercise, relax, because those first couple of days of relaxation, you think you're not making any progress, but you are. You're preparing. You're preparing the body and the mind for the process of meditation. That preparation is important, it's vital. As you know, that I've done a lot of building in the time I've been here. I still do little bits every now and again. And I always remember someone telling me that 90% of building is the preparation, preparing the ground, preparing sort of the equipment. If you're painting, sanding and cleaning the wall before you paint. And the sanding, the cleaning, that takes 90% of the time. Actually applying the paint with the brush or the roller takes a short amount of time. But unless you've actually done a preparation well, you get a bad job. And it's the same way with meditation. Prepare the body first of all. And then, when you want to meditate, it becomes just so easy. And again, I'm emphasizing this because sometimes people come to a meditation retreat and straight off, and just after the aircraft hits the runway and they hit this place, they're straight up, they're back straight, sitting for hours and hours and hours, trying to meditate. They've rushed into it too fast. They haven't relaxed. They haven't sort of just allowed the body to adjust to the new environment. And because of that, their meditation doesn't work, they get frustrated, they get tense. And the mistake people make is that when it doesn't work, you try harder. And then you get even more frustrated, so you try even harder. And you think that your effort is not adequate, which is why it's not working. But please don't think that effort is going to make you enlightened. Effort just makes you stressed out. I just got an email just a few days ago from a fellow over in Europe. And you know, he was just, he said every time he did his meditation retreat, after 2 or 3 days he'd get such tension inside his body. He had very, very unpleasant feelings, which meant he couldn't sleep at night. He couldn't even sit still because it was just so unpleasant. And he was asking me what was the problem. And to me it was a classic result of an all too common attitude to meditation. He was just trying too hard, just focusing on the tip of his nose, sitting up without any care for his body, and just forcing and forcing and forcing. After 3 days of forcing, what many people call concentration, I just call it control. Just sometimes things actually snap in your brain. You just get just too much this energy which is born of willpower, which is very negative and very unpleasant. And it wasn't a sort of a happy abiding, it was a big problem for his meditation. So my advice to him was just to allow your mind to wander. Don't be afraid if your mind doesn't stay with your meditation object. Don't be afraid of that, let it happen. Just relax a bit more, be gentle, don't be such a control freak. And I know that because I've been around a long time and seen it happen with other meditators. So in this retreat, be kind. Basic Buddhist kindness, compassion, the sort of thing which we give to everybody else, but we forget to give to ourselves. I imagine most of you have heard every story which I've ever told many, many times. But whenever I get especially new people, and especially Australians coming along, I love telling them that story of the 7 monks meditating in the cave. And for those of you who don't remember it, I'm sure you've heard it before, but some of you are getting quite old, you're losing your memory. But you know, it's the old 7 monks, there was a head monk, his brother, his best friend, his enemy. They just didn't get on together. The old monk, the sick monk, the old monk and the sick monk, they're about to die. No one knew who would die first, the old monk or the sick monk. And the final monk was the useless monk. Now the sort of monk that when he started meditating would start snoring almost immediately. You know, who could never remember the chanting. Who was always late for the meetings. You know, one of these monks, we call them the useless monk. And I often joke that every monastery has one. So there they were, the seven monks, and this band of robbers, bandits, they discovered that cave. And they wanted to kill every one of those monks and take over that cave as their hideout, so that they could store all their stolen goods there. And they used that as their base, because no one could find it in the middle of the jungle. But the head monk managed to convince the leader of the bandits to let everybody go as long as one would be sacrificed, as a warning to all the rest to be quiet. So that was where the head monk had to make the choice, who would be killed so all the rest could go free. And I often ask these Westerners especially, if that was you having that choice, who would you choose? And I tell them the seven monks again, the head monk, his brother, his best friend, his enemy, the old monk who's going to die soon anyway, the sick monk who's always going to die, you know, no one knew who's going to die first, or lastly, the old useless monk who'd never done anything for anybody in his whole life. So who was chosen to die? I won't ask you that question, because most of you will know that answer from my book, Open the Door of Your Heart, for other talks. But it was amazing, just when I asked that question of people who have never heard that story before, about 80-90% put their hand up and say, he sacrificed himself. And that's one of the reasons I tell that story, to get that answer out of people, to show them how much they are unkind to themselves, and how their compassion very rarely goes to this one, and is always given to others. Because that was the wrong answer. The other 10% usually say the useless monk. They're so unkind. Poor useless monk. Because you all know the answer was that the head monk couldn't choose. His compassion towards his brother was exactly the same, no more, no less, than the compassion to his best friend. He loved his enemy exactly the same as well as his best friend. The old monk, the sick monk, and the dear old useless monk as well. He loved each one of them, no more, no less. And the most important thing, he loved himself, no more, no less than all the other monks. That was a wise monk, who loves himself, no more, no less, and he loves everybody else. Usually the case is, we love others more. At least that's how we practice our compassion. But now, we have to love ourselves as we would love others. So if your partner or your best friend was here today, and you tell them, you know, you take a rest today, take it easy. Because you know you care for them, you know they've worked very hard. You should say that to yourself as well. Treat yourself as you would your best friend. Treat yourself as someone you love and care for. And if you do that, it's so easy to allow this body to relax. Why? Because look, I care for you, body. I've got to look after you every day. One of the practices, the practical things I ask you to do over the next 9 days here. When you go to bed tonight, when you're tucked up, you know, in your bed, your blankets over you, resting on your pillow, before you go to sleep, say, good night, me. Have a good sleep. See you in the morning. And the first thing you do when you wake up, good morning, me. Nice to see you again. Have a great day. Say good morning to yourself. Express your compassion to yourself. Because when you actually do that by some gesture or some action, some words, it actually reinforces it. And when you're kind to yourself, your body will relax enormously. And your mind will eventually become still all by itself And the beautiful, natural way of Buddhist meditation, the way which goes much deeper, forcing the mind through concentration get you so far. Letting the mind be through kindness gets you much deeper. This very fundamental Buddhist teaching. This is how Ajahn Chah used to express it. He would get his hand and move it up and down. He said, this is a leaf on a tree. You go and watch a real leaf this afternoon, you can see this happening. A leaf moves only because the wind is blowing. It's not the nature of a leaf to keep moving. But if we can somehow stop the wind, the leaf will continue moving, but less and less and less, until the leaf will come to its natural state of stillness. And Ajahn Chah said, that's like the human mind. Its nature is to be still, but it only moves because of the wind of craving, wanting, controlling. That's why it moves. So our job is not to have more wanting, more controlling. That will just make your mind move more. Which is why that some people try and meditate and they just can't do it. They just haven't got the point. They're just doing the meditation, they're controlling the mind, they're wanting something. And that just makes the mind move more. So with the simile of the leaf, we understand our job is not to control or to crave. Our job is to try and take that control or that craving, that wanting, that wind, and stop it. So to protect our mind from all of that. And then when you do that, when you stop all this wanting and controlling and trying to get somewhere, trying to attain something, when you're just being here, kind, making peace, being gentle, you're not doing anything, you're just watching, you're just with this moment. Then you find it's quite remarkable, it's amazing, it's beautiful to watch. Your mind moves less and less and less and less. And it's doing it by itself. You're not trying to focus. The mind just becomes still on one thing. And it's a beautiful thing to watch, the present moment, which means you're not moving into the past or the future anymore. You're just being here. Being here in this moment with this experience of now, you're feeling the cool air on your body, listening to the sounds of myself or other people, just seeing sort of the bricks in the wall. Whatever it is, it's just this experience of life as it's happening right now. We're not wanting it to be different, we're not trying to attain anything, we're not trying to go anywhere. We're just being here. And in that very giving up of wanting to be somewhere else, in the renouncing of control, in just being aware, that's all, not going anywhere or doing anything, controlling anything, that is where the peace comes from. That is where meditation starts to happen. When you're not wanting anything, when you're just being, when you're not moving. And then these beautiful states of peace, joy, deep stillness arise inside of you. So I've been doing this such a long time. I never focus on my breath anymore. I just stay in this present moment, just totally let go. And just the body starts to really relax, becomes so cool and so easy. And then you start to get some joy and happiness coming up inside. It's just so pleasant and so lovely. Then breath just comes up by itself. I don't choose, you just know the breath is coming in, going out. And I mention this later on, the main reason that happens is because there's nothing else moving. It's just my breath is the only last thing which moves up and down. Everything else is just still. And just stay with that, don't try and make it do anything. But it calms down and disappears, and you get into deep states of peace. And great states of bliss. Those are the states which I wish everyone here to taste, even a small amount. Because it literally will blow your mind away. You understand, wow, this is the happiness of meditation. And it's coming just because you know how to let go of this terrible wanting and craving and managing and manipulating, which we do all the time. You crave, you want, you work hard because you know, you think you can get some happiness there. But you'll find when you go in the opposite direction, when you give up all that happiness and craving and wanting, everything that craving and wanting promised you, you get when you let go of the craving and wanting. The beautiful sense of peace and happiness, just being here, contentment. You get those feelings which maybe you've had a few times in your life. You're at a place, at a time, and you're totally content. There's no other place in the world you'd rather be. And honestly, there's no other time you want to be. You're just so fulfilled, happy, content, just being here in this moment with the people around you, where nothing is missing, where everything is just good enough for you. Those feelings of contentment, of being at peace with oneself and the whole universe, are great states of spiritual fulfillment and joy. If you stay in those places long enough, they deepen and become even more powerful and more joyful. So when you start doing this, you'll find this meditation is the easiest thing in the world to do. It doesn't take any effort, but it takes a lot of wisdom. You don't have to be like a super-willed person who knows how to strive and get what you want. You just have to be smart. You now have to see, with your wisdom, what the cause of the problem is. The cause of the problem is thinking that your happiness and fulfillment in life is somewhere else. It's in the jhanas, it's in the breath, it's in this lights or whatever else. It's not, it's right here in this moment, with what you have. Stay here. Don't go anywhere. Make peace with this moment. Be kind to your body. And then you find the whole world becomes peaceful, pure and still. And just sit here. And hopefully many of you will get the message. And you'll just be sitting here, just doing absolutely nothing. Just making peace, being kind. And the body will get so rested, it will just sit absolutely still for you. It doesn't want to go anywhere. So I usually give that simile of going out with your best friend for a cup of coffee. Suppose that you know you had an afternoon free, so you rang up a friend and said, let's go for a cup of coffee somewhere. So you tell your friend, now I want to go to Gloria Jean's. Not Starbucks, not Dome, not, what else is there? I don't know, I'm not a good person who goes to coffee shops. We're going to go to Gloria Jean's, no other place. And we're going to sit at the table in the corner, not by the window, not by this sort of part, in the window. You're going to sit on that seat, I'm going to sit on this seat. And you're not going to have a latte, you're not going to have a cappo, you're going to have a short black like I have. No muffins, just a biscuit, that's all you're going to have. And we're going to talk about Buddhism. We're not going to talk about sort of your family or sport or the politics. Okay, we'll just talk about Buddhism. We're going to be there for 1 hour and then we go, okay? Now, if you ring up a friend and tell them that, they'll say, I'm busy, I can't make it. That's not how you treat a friend, is it? So why do you treat your mind like that? You're going to sit on this cushion. You're going to sit with a straight back. You're not going to nod. You're not going to fall asleep. You're not going to be restless. You're going to watch the breath and nothing else for 1 hour, not 55 minutes. Okay? Now you know why your mind doesn't play with you anymore. Why, as soon as it sees you coming, it runs away. So, be kind to your best friend. You ring him up and say, want a cup of coffee or a cup of tea somewhere? And you tell your friend, where do you want to go? I said, I found this new coffee shop in the back of Singapore. Really? Is it good? Yeah. Okay, let's give it a try. And you go there. So where should we sit? You don't tell your friend where to sit. You don't tell your friend what type of coffee they have. You just say, what do you want? I'll pay. No, no, you paid last time. No, I insist, I'll pay. Now, come on, have an extra muffin. Have one on me. So when you're kind like that, you find you sit with your friend for hours at the coffee shop. You know, you miss other appointments. You get home late. Why is that? Because you're having a great time together. When you're having a great time together, you tend to hang out together for long periods. That's what a best friend is like. You enjoy each other's company. Now imagine that the best friend was your mind. You've had such wonderful times together in the past. And so as soon as you like SMS your mind, how about do some meditation? Wow, yeah, I remember the last time we meditated. That's just a great time together. Yeah, I'm coming over straight away. And that's actually how you meditate for long periods of time. That's what my mind is like, because I've treated it that way for so many years. When it's time for my retreat, my mind gets excited. You know that sometimes people have these dogs in the house, and when it's time to take the dog out for a walk, you know, the dog wags its tail and gets all excited. That's my mind. When I say we're going to meditate, it wags its tail, woo, and it goes round in circles. We're going to meditate, woohoo, yeah! Because we've had such a great time together in the past. And that's how meditation happens. When you're kind and gentle to your mind, the mind loves to be with you. So all this restlessness and dullness, restlessness is when the mind tries to run away anywhere else, past, future, fantasies, plans, any place except to be with you. Now, isn't that telling you something? It's nothing to do with willpower. It's just being so cruel to yourself. So be kind to your mind. And when your mind is like your best friend, and your best friend looks upon you as his friend, then you just love hanging out together. Restlessness will just hardly be there. Dullness. Oh, that's interesting. Is that one of the crows? Oh. Okay. Okay, I thought the door was laughing. Anyway, so when you're... It's not just talking about like doors, being kind to doors. Now, if you are kind to doors, they're much easier to open. You try that and you try and force the door open. It never opens. And I don't know when I told this story before, but it reminded me of one of the Anagarikas who was here before the rains, Michael from Germany. Remember Mike from Germany? And he told that story, the ATM. It's a classic story. He was just like this student in the university somewhere in Germany. And when he first went on campus, he just passed the ATM and it made a sound. He said it was like a gurgle, you know, just like the door made a sound. And he didn't know why. I mean, it was totally irrational. But he took that as like a gesture of friendship. Right, you know, the ATM was actually just making contact and being kind. And that's actually how he imagined it. So every time he passed the ATM, he just like waved at it or smiled at it. And every now and again, sometimes it would gurgle, sometimes it wouldn't. But, you know, he sort of was kind to it. And he said, oh, maybe about after 6 months or a year, he was just sitting on a bench next to the ATM, just, I think, having some lunch or something. And no one else was around. No one had been to that ATM, you know, for maybe 20, 30 minutes since he sat there. And it gurgled quite loudly. And he turned around, and a 20-euro note came out. And he said, absolutely truth. He said, I wouldn't lie to you, Ajahn Bob. This 20-euro note came out only because he was kind to the ATM. He was very friendly to it every day, you know, giving it meta.
And there the $20. And he couldn't believe it. He took the 20 out. He waved it around. It didn't belong to anybody. No one owned it at all. And that's what happens if you're cut into an ATM. You might get 20 euros or 50 sing. So next, if you really... It's a true story. If you are short of cash, just find an ATM and stroke it there. Nice ATM. I really hope that you're very happy where you are. If it can work with an ATM, it can work with your mind. So by giving it kindness and giving it a bit of compassion, you know, you'll find your mind will play with you. It will like to hang out with you and be kind to it every now and again. Gives you these beautiful gifts of nimittas or jhanas or enlightenment or whatever. Just like 20 euro comes out of this machine for no reason. You know, stream meaning comes out of your machine. Arahat, enlightenment, psychic powers comes out. Oh, thank you very much. Now that's not so being so silly, because that's actually how things happen. Just when you're kind, if you want it, it never happens. And if you bang on that machine, come on, give me some money, it never happens. If you bang on your mind, come on, let something happen in meditation, come on, I want at least some peace, come on, give me something. Of course, nothing ever happens. So with that gentleness and kindness there, your mind wants to play with you, wants to stay with you. When you don't want anything, everything becomes very still. When you're going somewhere, when you want to attain something, we call that suffering. Suffering is wanting to be somewhere where you're not. Wanting to get something you haven't got. Wanting to reach some place where you aren't right now. That's called suffering. And you don't need to go anywhere. My goodness, you've got to Jhana Grove, this beautiful, peaceful place. What more do you want? You've got nothing to do here. You got no boss, no husband, no nagging wife, no kids, no boss, no tax office trying to get some money out of you. Nothing. You're totally, absolutely, 100% free here. You've got your own room. You don't have to queue up for the toilets. You can go in there any time you like. You know, how many people have like a nice room like that in Singapore? I've been to the HDB blocks. These tiny blocks. I mean, this is better than the HDB. The Jhana Grove. It's like luxury. You've got all this place for yourself. And you don't have much to clean. Don't have much to do. Get beautiful food served. You don't have to pay for it. Oh, it's brilliant. Eat as much as you like. That's why it's really nice, because all the food which is served in monasteries or temples is holy food. And because it's holy food, it means you can eat as much as you like. Because, you know, the holy part of it, you know, balances, you know, the cholesterol and the sugar and the diabetes. So you can enjoy yourself. Because, you know, if you're going to have a heart attack, what better place to have a heart attack? Than in a monastery where you've got a monk and I can do all the chanting for you straight on the spot. In Singapore, it's very hard to get monks around, you know, do chanting. It costs a lot of money. Of course, I'll do it just gratis for free so you die here. So that way, you can have a great time. So, during this retreat, if ever you get tense or upset, just ask yourself, what do I want? Or even better, what more do I want? And if you say, nothing, this is as much as I want, this is good enough for me, then where's the problem? All the problem is when you want something more, something extra, something different. So during this retreat, just ask yourself, what more do I want? Nothing, I'm just really happy to be here. Just being with this old body, old mind of mine. Being kind to it, being at peace with it. It's not perfect, but it's good enough.
And then it becomes totally perfect. Last night I said this other great story. I'm just repeating it again. It was a story of the old Japanese garden. For those of you who've seen the garden around here, you'll understand that story. But I mention this in particular because at our city centre in Nollamara, you know, the monks have been away for about 2.5 months. It's the first time I went back there to give a talk after the retreat, which we'd done. And so the place was looking a bit messy. And a few people were complaining, saying we're not looking after our Buddhist temple. So I gave the story of the Japanese garden. Because once there was this garden in Japan, and it was the most famous Zen garden in the whole country. People would come, not just from all over Japan, but from many other countries, just to admire this incredibly beautiful Zen garden. It was not just beautiful, there was something spiritual about it as well. It was the most famous garden in the whole of the country of Japan. And you know how these Zen gardens are just amazing. So, one day this old meditation monk came to find out the secret of the most beautiful garden in the whole country. Always be careful in any Buddhist story where there's an old monk. Any younger monks had better watch out. So the old monk got to the garden very early. He climbed over the wall even though it was shut. And he hid behind a bush to try and find out the secret of this most beautiful garden in the whole of Japan. And early, just after dawn, the old monk saw this young monk come out. He was a gardening monk. He was the expert. He was one of these people with this artistic ability who could just know how to put shape and colour just in the right places to give this amazing, beautiful effect. And he saw this young monk come out with two baskets. Painstakingly, he would pick up every leaf and twig on the floor. And before he put it in a basket, he would look on it, examine it, to assess his artistic beauty. Whether it had the right colours, the right shape, whether the twig was bent just in a beautiful shape or not. If it was, he put it in one basket. If he could not make use of it, he put it in the rubbish basket. He took 3 long hours picking up every leaf and twig, examining it and separating it out. And after the 3rd hour, he threw the rubbish leaves and twigs on the compost pile in the back of the temple. He laid the other basket down and he paused for tea and the most important thing, meditation, to calm his mind, to empower it for the next most important stage. After his meditation, he placed every leaf and twig individually just in the right place in the garden. Sometimes he'd put a leaf down and stop and gaze for 5 minutes. Something was not quite right. And he would just turn the leaf just a few degrees and that would make all the difference in the world. And at the end of that 3 hours of putting every leaf and twig in just the right place, that garden, that was amazing. Because he had the gift of the arrangement of shape and colour and texture. It was a work of art. Which is why in the afternoon he would open up the garden for visitors. And it was why people would come from all over the world and be amazed at the beauty of that garden. But of course that day, before he opened it up to the public, the old monk came out from behind the bushes. And the old monk said, I've been watching you all morning. And I want to come up to say just how impressed I am with your hard, painstaking and careful work. And I also want to tell you that your garden, your beautiful garden, is almost perfect. And of that word, almost. The young monk's face went white. His jaw dropped. He fell to the ground. And he bowed to the senior monk and said, "Master, Master, please tell me how I can make my garden really perfect." And the old monk said, "Do you want to know?" If the young monk was smart, he would have said no. But being stupid, he said yes. "So I'll show you," said the old monk, "how to make your garden really perfect." And he strode into the middle of the garden where there's a big tree. He put his arms around that tree. And he shook the hell out of that tree. Twigs and leaves fell all over the place, totally messing up the whole 6 hours morning work. It was a mess. Leaves and twigs all over the place. And that gardening monk was shocked. He was quivering. He was upset. He was angry. But the old monk looked at the work and said, "Ah, now that's really perfect." And I like that story. Because that's true, isn't it? You try and make things perfect and you're a control freak. Real perfection is just when you look at nature, a leaf this way, a twig that way. You go out into the forest around here, you see a tree is leaning this way, a tree is leaning that way. Now that's beautiful, that's perfect. It's amazing when you do meditate and you do get peaceful, you see that. You go outside and everything looks beautiful and perfect. You know you've understood the meaning of that story when you can go home and you see your old partner, your dumpy old wife, or your frail old husband, and look at him and say, "Wow, you're perfect." Or even better, when you can go into your bathroom and look in the mirror and say, "You're perfect, me." Then you understand the meaning of that story. Can you do that? No, you can't. When you can just look at your mind in meditation and say, "Mind, you're perfect." Then you understand how to meditate. So, when you are looking at your mind in meditation, this is perfect. With all the leaves and twigs all over the place. And then you find you have peace. Then you find you have stillness. You're content, happy to be here. And then when you're happy to be here, you spend hours with yourself, just like hours with your friend having a cup of coffee. You sit down on your chair, on your cushion, and people are amazed, just how long are you sitting there for? 2 hours, 3 hours, what have you been doing? Oh, just hanging out with myself. Just being peaceful, being still. But the truth is, when you really get into it, you just get heaps and heaps of joy and peace and stillness. And it's not just for the sake of joy and happiness. You're learning the Dhamma. You're learning the truth. You're learning just while you meditate. Not to get somewhere, but to be at peace with where we already are. To go deep into this moment and find in the center of all this is the more bliss than you can ever handle. More freedom. On the way back yesterday, where was it? I said, just with one of the drivers going into town, and he was commenting as we were driving through a busy part of Perth. He was saying, "Is this just what life is like outside a monastery?" And I mentioned that out there in the world, they're pursuing what we call the freedom of desires. The desires to go and get you a cup of coffee, get you a dress, get you something to eat, whatever you want. They have food courts, every type of food you can get in these food courts. Just the freedom of desires. I say in meditation we have another type of freedom. the freedom from desires. Freedom of desires. When you want this, you follow that. And you know there's never any freedom there. How much you have, how much you get. There's always something more. The freedom of desires. Where desires are no longer pulling and pushing you around. You're just sitting here, totally free of every desire. Totally content to be here. With nothing demanding you go anywhere or be anything other than where you are and what you are. The freedom from desires. Just happy and peaceful to be here. And then you understand why we have a meditation retreat center. A place where your basic needs are supplied. So you don't need anything in the whole world. So you can totally relax and understand what it means to have freedom from desires for a few days. Only for a few days. You're going to have to go back to work afterwards. But while you're here, enjoy this amazing freedom. Once you understand this, it's like you've been let out of prison for 9 days. This is your parole. You've got to go back again. But enjoy it while you have it. And if you really want a longer freedom from jail, then you've got to shave your hair off and wear brown robes. But in the meantime, at least get some parole. So, on this first talk of this retreat, I haven't given any specific instructions. There's not like a how-to list which you can write down. But hopefully I've set the scene for this retreat. Created the mood of a freedom from desires. Created this idea of being content, being kind to your body. Giving that simile of like taking out your mind for a cup of coffee. And not telling your mind what to do. But being a kind and being a friend to your mind. And if you do that, I can guarantee you, you have a very peaceful, beautiful, wonderful time. Then just when it's ready, just the mind will just be sitting here and just going to these deep, beautiful states of meditation. All by itself. And you think, wow, did I do that? No, you didn't do it. It just happened when you got out of the way. I tell monks and anagarikas, I said that many times during the last retreat and the talks I gave to the monks. I put my hand up. Ajahn Brahm, your abbot, your teacher, I admit it, I can't meditate. I've gone on record, I can't meditate. When I'm there, my meditation's hopeless. When I disappear, wow, that's neat. I can't meditate. I have to disappear. I have to get out of the way. Ajahn Brahm has to disappear. And then, wow, this is neat. Now that's what happens with meditation. You try and do it, you're just stuffing your mind up. Just let go, be peace. Be kind, be gentle. And then you'll experience blisses which are just out of this world. That's what I want you to have. Greatest joy, peace, insights, everything which Buddhism says in the books, you can experience that. Just by letting go and disappearing. Just being content to be here. And you have a wonderful time. So, setting the scene for this retreat. And as you know that there's a sort of schedule which has been set, but we don't have any secret police in this retreat centre. We haven't got any, not even one CCTV camera monitoring what you're doing. So you are totally free. If you want to take a break, have a rest. If you want to meditate, meditate. You want to walk meditation. We've got these three rooms on either side here with the little the red carpets. That's how much we care for you. We give you red carpet to do your walking meditation on. Your royalty. If you don't like walking in there, you can just go and walk outside in the forest. If you want to just take a rest, you can take a rest in your room. You can meditate in your room. You can meditate in the forest.
So be kind, be gentle, make peace, and make use of this place.
There's going to be lunch is at 11 o'clock, isn't it?
I won't be having lunch with you today. I've got to go back over to monastery, but the other days I'll be having lunch.
So you don't need a bell to tell you when lunch is. Every one of you will know when lunch is.
You need a bell to wake you up in the morning, but not to say when lunch is.
And you have a nice lunch and have a nice afternoon. And be around in the afternoon for some, some interviews. And then after the interviews, I have to go back to monastery again for ceremony, because it's a moon day today, the full moon day, the Mahapavana day. So we have to do a ceremony over there. But I'll be back again for this evening's questions and answers. And you know how the questions and answers works? Just in the lobby over there, there's a desk with some pieces of paper and pens. So you just write down your question. And afterwards, so it's anonymous, you just write it down and put it in a basket. And then I can read out the question and give an answer in the evening between 8 and 9 o'clock. However, if you write too many questions, I get to know your handwriting. So I get to know which one it is. So you can ask the questions in the evening. That's 8 till 9. So again, it's only the first day, so just relax, enjoy yourself, and just see what happens. Who knows, maybe today is your day, maybe it's tomorrow. But just learn how to be content and be at peace. This is your holiday. Relax. And it's also the deepest way you can ever meditate. So are there any questions about what I've just been saying?